Last week was a busy one for the Jacks, but we're back this week and looking to sit back and chill, something Matt Cook will be doing a lot of. This is the Sports Radio Jacks. Welcome to the Sports Radio Jacks. Coming up over the next hour, March Madness, Carmelo Anthony, Matt Cook, Craig Anderson, the National League, and Rebecca Black. You can listen to us live at centennialondemand.com/centennial-internet-radio, or you can download the podcast by clicking on Centennial Internet Radio. You can also hit us up on our Twitter at Sports Jacks. I'm still Josh Lewinberg. He's still Aaron Karolnik. And the man that puts the man in Mangos. Did that make any sense?
The legend.
Jimmy Mangos!
You're too kind.
What's going on, boys?
How you guys doing?
Not bad.
I'm doing quite well.
Josh, I noticed you said goodbye to the goatee recently. Caused that?
I did. I don't know. Felt like it was time for a change. Normally, I just shave this thing off when I have a job interview and I need to look respectable, but...
Oh, the goatee was a defining part of your character.
You're looking clean shaven today as well, I noticed.
Yes, that's true. Jimmy,
except for me, though.
Scruff as always.
That's okay. I'll shave tonight just for you guys.
Okay. Nice.
He's wearing pants today, though. That's a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, definitely.
A nice blue jeans.
Now, I want to take us back to yesterday for a little bit. Do you remember yesterday, the day before today?
Tuesday,
yesterday,
right?
It was Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and me and Aaron were having a little convo. And we were trying to figure out what we're going to open the show with today. And he threw Rebecca Black's name out there. That's the 13-year-old YouTube sensation Rebecca Black. And my exact words, I believe, and I quote, "You fool, stop wasting my time," I believe is what I said. Because I had listened to this thing once before. I know we mentioned... The talented individual on this podcast once before, and I didn't really care much for it. But then I went back and I listened to it again, and I thought there might be something here. This might be the worst song of all time. So, Aaron, you genius, well done.
Thank you. I appreciate the kind words.
So I thought we'd talk about this a little bit today and compare it amongst the worst songs of all time. I know no one really cares for either mine or your opinions.
Well, speak for yourself,
but,
Josh.
No one cares about what you have to say, Aaron. Let's face it. But the public here wants to know what Jimmy Mangos has to say. His opinion is very highly regarded, especially when it comes to music and 13-year-old girls. So it'll be interesting to see what you have to say about this this song, Jimmy.
Rebecca Black, you're talking about, right?
Rebecca Black, yes.
Well, I haven't heard much about the song, but... Oh, she's 13 years old.
She's 13.
I can't just sit here and bash a 13-year-old.
You can and you will.
I mean, maybe she's a female version of Justin Bieber. But maybe she hasn't hit puberty yet. That's the reason. Maybe. Give her another year.
I think she's well on her way there. I wouldn't worry about that, Jimmy.
Well, let's see what all the fuss is about for all those that are unfamiliar with what we're talking about. Here's a little bit of the hit classic, Friday.
I love Fridays.
I think she's lovely.
Yeah, Jimmy was standing up dancing. I've never seen him dance before.
You know what? It's got a pretty good beat, though.
Yeah, it's
a pretty nice beat.
Some high quality.
I'm sure a lot of young kids her age love that song.
Realistically, so. It's nails on a chalkboard. Like, all I'm hearing is...
A part of the song we didn't play, there's some high quality lyrics. We've got, we so excited. We so excited. We're going to have a ball today. Tomorrow is Saturday. And Sunday comes afterwards. Some very profound stuff.
Wow. She's not wrong. Like that's the correct order of the days.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, you think
she's very bright.
You know, actually, it's not even Rebecca Black who's behind the lyrics. It's the producer of the song, the African American fellow who appears later in the video. His name's Patrice Wilson.
What about the guy giving high fives? Remember that video?
He's a roadie.
Oh no, that's the follow up to the video. But yeah, that guy is
he's very
a low life.
So anyway, I contacted my good friends at Wikipedia and looked a little bit into an AOL radio blog, I think it was, and I conducted a little bit of a poll to see what the top five worst songs of all time might be. So without further ado, the worst five songs of all time. Number five.
Who let the dogs out?
That was obviously Who Let the Dogs Out by Baha Man. Is it wrong that I kind of like that?
I don't know. I like that tune.
It's terrible. It's terrible, but
that was a big song when it came out in grade 8. I remember that.
Grade 8.
Everybody loved that. I think so, right? Grade 8, grade 9?
Probably approximately around that time.
The Michael Vick National Anthem?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's next?
Number 4. Jimmy, you're singing along. Does this take you back to?
This is grade 5. I remember this. Grade 5. I remember. Everybody loved this song. Grade
dance
5.
Parties.
The dance parties. Yeah. Yeah.
You'll find that that was Barbie Girl Aqua, 1997, I believe. You'll find that there's a lot of 90s garbage on this list. So without further ado, number 3. Is this the top five worst songs or the top five best songs?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. By judging by Jimmy Mangos' reactions to these songs, this must be a list of favorites.
You gotta love the Spice Girls. What was the redhead's name again?
There was a redhead.
Ginger, right?
Oh yeah, Ginger Spice.
That was my favorite one.
Isn't that David Beckham's wife? No,
that's Posh.
Posh. My knowledge of Spice Girls.
Part of me enjoys a little bit of the first three songs that we have on this list, just because of how terrible they are. But there is no one who could possibly enjoy this. Taking you back to 1997 with number 2. To be clear, that last lyric was
Jimmy, didn't you tell me that you and your brothers used to dress up like Hanson and dance around your house in Mississauga?
Maybe you should ask Greg Hood that. He has the same hairstyle as them.
And without further ado, the worst song of all time.
This is DJ Paulie D. Being a Guido's a way of life. I don't represent all Italians, I represent myself. I started this whole GTL shit. Gym, tan, and laundry. You gotta stay fresh today.
It's time to beat that beat up.
Sorry, Jimmy.
I don't think that's really a song, really. It's just like a, kind of like a trance music, right? There's no singing, really. It's just saying.
I think he's a
Guido.
Tremendous piece of music.
Straight from the Jersey Shore.
Wait a minute,
soundtrack.
You forgot Ricky Martin. She Bangs? That song was one of the worst songs ever.
Actually, yeah, that was in my top 10, but it didn't make the cut.
Living La Vida Loca? How about that? That's a great tune.
Whoa.
One of my favorites.
Or how about She's All That?
So,
remember that song?
Terrible.
She's All.
Wait, if he wants to sing for us,
go ahead, Jimmy.
That's okay. I'll pass.
So now that we've heard some of the worst songs of all time, where does Rebecca Black rank among this garbage, AK?
I'd consider Rebecca Black pretty much an embarrassment to humanity as a whole. The song has pretty much established dolphins as the smartest species, and that's all what I have to say about that.
Jimmy, is Rebecca Black the worst song of all time?
I don't think so. I mean, the girl's 13 years old, first of all. You gotta I don't want to smash her right now, but
no,
I think the worst song to me is Ricky Martin, She Bangs. That's by far the worst song I've ever heard in my life.
Okay, but me and you are saying worst song of all time, AK?
I think lyrically, the song was written by... It's just so atrocious lyrically. It's just so
uncreative. You're saying Kevin Federline is better than Rebecca Black?
Oh boy. 2-1, Jimmy, you lose. So Rebecca Black is officially named the worst artist of all time. Let's hear what she has to say about it. We'll hear what her feelings on the subject
is.
Her song Friday is the worst song I've ever heard in my entire life. Even deaf people are complaining.
Okay. It doesn't bother me.
I hate her voice. It's going to be stuck in my head for life. Friday, 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 OMG.
I think that's an accomplishment, you know? Even a person that doesn't like it, it's going to be stuck in their head. So that's the point of it. It's a catchy song.
What's the meanest thing you've read that maybe hurt you the most?
I hope you cut yourself, and I hope you get an eating disorder so you'll look pretty, and I hope you go cut and die. I think I have talent on some level. I don't think I'm the worst singer, but I don't think I'm the best singer.
She seems pretty okay with it.
Ouch. Wow, I never heard that before.
She's realistic. She doesn't consider herself some kind of, singing genius, but, still. I like to read a comment I read on YouTube about the song. One user writes, "She sucks. I would rather get AIDS than meet her."
Oh, wow.
So that speaks to what some of the people out there are thinking about this song.
She seems pretty optimistic, though. She doesn't seem like...
I'd be pretty happy, too, if I had 35 million views on YouTube and I was making $24,900 per day from track sales.
But as a 13 years old?
Life's pretty good for her.
Yeah, actually, I was reading that she gets 70 cents per download on iTunes, and she's already got millions of downloads already, so I'm sure she's...
Who do you think the biggest follower in her class is for Rebecca Black?
Oh, Alex Terry loves Rebecca Black.
I think Giannis Bunkus loves Rebecca Black as well.
Really?
Yeah.
I know Alex has been a big proponent of Rebecca in classes and on Facebook wall as well. So I haven't heard Giannis speak to Rebecca Black yet. But
to sum up, Aaron was right. I was wrong. This is a good story. And as future journalists, we have to be able to identify these stories when we see them. And speaking of which, we took a little field trip on Thursday last week to go to the courthouse at Old City Hall and basically find a story. And of course, many of you may remember Thursday as St. Paddy's Day and day one of March Madness. And we had to miss a large chunk of it to go to the courthouse. Jimmy, did you miss the madness?
No, I had a great time at the courthouse. It was like a dream come true. No.
Did you get any interesting stories?
Seriously, no. It was the worst assignment I've ever done in my life. Such a waste of time. It was pointless to me.
Oh, boy.
I found a story about a speeding ticket. Well, big deal. I see that every day. But it's pretty stupid. Especially on the best day of this year. It was like 15 degrees outside, too. It was a beautiful day. And I was stuck in a courthouse.
AK, did you get a story?
I got a story about the security at Old City Hall. Some very interesting quotes from an articling student. And a security guard gave me a quote off the record, but I decided to use it regardless. But it wasn't the worst assignment. It was cool to get experience down at the city hall. It was certainly interesting, and it'll be valuable down the line for you, Jimmy, as a journalist. I think you certainly should relish those type of opportunities.
I don't think I'm ever gonna be at the courthouse again unless something bad.
I think you'll be at the courthouse many times.
On my end, after wandering aimlessly for a little while, I ended up in the Toronto Drug Treatment Court. It's pretty interesting. Lots of interesting looking characters there. So I got to hear a little bit about what the recovering addicts had to say. And there's actually a rule put in place that prohibits any kind of recording device being used in the court. But as you know, I'm not one for rules. I make my own rules, obviously. So I got a little bit of a clip of what one of the addicts had to say. So let's give that a listen.
Awesome.
You don't worry that you're going to die when you take that many drugs?
Dying's for fools.
He was actually one of the nicest addicts. He autographed my 7-gram crack rock on the way out.
What a guy.
Very nice.
How many Twitter followers does that addict have? Excuse me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't even know if that's really him. Is it? Is that confirmed?
I don't know. I don't know. I have to find out.
I don't think has the mental stability to be using Twitter right now.
I don't think so. Or the internet accessibility either.
One gentleman who was certainly not pleased to be missing a little bit of the madness was Giannis Bunkus, as you mentioned earlier, Jimbo.
Giannis.
And Giannis is actually our NCAA correspondent, our man in the field for the madness. And we heard a little bit from him last week, so we're going to go back to him this week to do a segment we call 60 Seconds of Madness.
What up, Hoop fans? It's your boy J-Bunk back in the house for another 60 Seconds of Madness. Where are we going to kick it off this week? Oh, I know. How about Notre Dame and Pittsburgh? Thanks a lot, Big Least. I really helped out my bracket when you guys blew those games like that. Florida State? Butler? Are you kidding me? Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Big East. You really, really killed my bracket. The only team that cuts through is Marquette? Marquette and what? UConn, who got 5 games in 5 days and they can't get iced out? Are you kidding me? This is crap. Give me some, what do we got? ACC. ACC is carrying it. We got Florida State looking good, Duke, and NC. All three of these teams I'm loving. I love Coach K. Shout out to his 900 victory. Bruce Pearl getting the axe after his team can't stop a team that has no free throw shots made in an entire game. See ya, Bruce. Wouldn't want to be ya. BYU Cougars, baby. The Mormons are looking fire hot. They got, what we got? Jiver for dead over there. Draining tray balls after tray ball after tray ball. I love me some Mormons, baby. They're going to keep on rolling through Florida.
Tell us what you really think, Giannis.
Yeah, wow. He's not one to, obscure the truth. It was great, though, Giannis.
He really just needs to let himself go.
He's an entertaining fellow, that's
I'm surprised
sure.
He never mentioned the Huskies, Washington Huskies.
He only has 60 seconds, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have talked about that, though, since he would cry when they lost.
He was definitely very sad to see the Huskies go down to UNC, but that was a great game.
It was.
So let's take this into our own hands for a second and discuss what makes this tournament so popular, basically, is the upsets, the surprising moments of the tournament. What has stood out to you so far, Jimmy?
I gotta say VCU. I mean, this is a team that had to win, had to beat USC just to get into the tournament, and now you see them destroy Georgetown by 20 points, and then they beat Purdue, who I picked to go to the finals. They beat them by 20 points, and they've been really impressive so far.
They scored 94 points in that game against Purdue, and maybe even more impressive is the fact that they only had 4 turnovers, so they've been efficient. They've moved the ball well, and they've looked really good offensively.
What's shocking to me is that Purdue looked like a high school team. They couldn't stop VCU at all.
Yeah, Purdue's known as one of the best defensive teams in the country,
too. Yeah, Juwan Johnson, one of the greatest.
Etwan, those are your boys,
Purdue. He's the league in blocks, and I don't know what happened. The whole team around them.
Right out of the gym. Yeah. For me, Florida State was a team that I liked coming into the tournament. I didn't believe the matchups worked for them, and I was definitely wrong. Ken Pomeroy, who's a fellow, if you don't know, whose opinion you should definitely respect, has an efficiency rating system. It's kenpom.com if you want to check it out. He had Florida State as the best defensively efficient team in the nation this season. So I don't know why I didn't have them going further. I should have.
I'll tell you why, because Chris Singleton was hurt, and everybody got scared. They didn't know if he was going to play, and you could tell. Chris Singleton's a huge aspect of that team.
I think that a VCU Florida State game is going to be a good one. And if Florida State can get past them, facing up
Kansas,
with Kansas.
Kansas plays Richmond.
Yeah, Kansas.
Kansas is the easiest bracket so far. They have a 10, 11, and 12 seed.
Yeah, it's very possible they don't face a team below a 9 seed until the Final Four.
Right.
And Kansas has looked good. The Morris brothers representing. They had, I believe, they combined for 41-23. In their previous game, 16 of 28 shooting, so they've been good.
It's like the Lopez bros back at Stanford back in the day. Remember those guys?
They lost in Sweet 16, though, I think.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
It's tough to talk unexpected victories without mentioning Butler, because they've pretty much been the epitome of the upset over the last couple years in this tournament. Are people still underestimating this team?
Not anymore, that's for sure.
Shelvin Mack, Matt Howard. Shelvin Mack is
still have Howard from last year.
Straight up G. The guy just nails tray balls, to quote Giannis Bunkus, just nails tray balls in everyone's face. Nailed deep 30-foot bombs. And Matt Howard inside is a stud. I can't believe I had Old Dominion beating Butler.
Me too. I don't know why.
Butler last year.
I listened to Seth Davis too much. I don't know why.
Exactly. Seth Davis killed.
Damn you, Seth Davis.
Perhaps I'd be more impressed if they're winning these games by 30, but I don't think I would. I'm very impressed by the fact that when it comes down to it, clutch time, Butler is showing up and they're winning these games at the last second, and that just shows.
And by stupid fouls by Pittsburgh, right?
Well, we'll get to that as well. Believe me. Let's actually go to the officiating, because there's been some questionable calls or missed calls So far in the first couple rounds, I guess it's first three rounds now, that's what we're going with. Is this just bad officiating? Is that what we're seeing here?
Well, for speaking about the Butler-Pittsburgh incident, the two fouls in the last 1.5 seconds of the game, the game should have been over on that Gilbert Brown half-court heave. They probably shouldn't have even called a foul on that, but when Gilbert missed the second half of of his free throws, and then Matt Howard rebounded and was about to heave the ball full court to tie the game or to win the game, and he got fouled. All he needed to do is make one free throw to win, and that was a play that probably shouldn't
have even gone to that point. Well, the officiating said they were going to go by the book, so whatever is a foul, they're going to call it. So
yeah, I'm a big proponent of that. A foul is a foul is a foul is a foul, no matter when it is. And what were you going to say, Jim?
I just say these kids are young; they don't know any better, and they're going to be fouling. They're not. You know, not as bright as the NBA players.
Right? Another great point. I think more than terrible officiating, which there has been some bad officiating, but we're seeing a lot of rookie mistakes, and that's really what makes this tournament so exciting, the fact that a lot of these young guys, whether it be free throw shooting, defense at the end of games, just missed assignments. That's what we're seeing here, and that was a big proponent, I think, of the late game situation there with all those fouls.
Yeah, I agree with that, but then again, you have that Texas-Arizona game where it was pretty obvious that Corey Joseph had called timeout before the referee raised his hand. It was pretty obvious.
4.1 seconds, I believe.
Yeah, and then obviously Arizona got the ball, and Derek Williams had that and one, and they ended up winning the game. And then, of course, the Syracuse-Marquette game where Scoop Jardine was called for the backcourt violation. That should not have been a backcourt violation by the rules. You know, there has been some bad officiating, but at the same time, there's obviously instances where kids will be kids and dumb plays will be made. That's how it is.
The thing about that, they always find a way to even the game out. Like, I remember North Carolina against Washington. I think North Carolina only had two fouls. And then I think by the halftime, the refs looked at their sheet and said, oh my God, maybe we should, you know, turn the game around and start giving more fouls to UNC. And that's what started happening. They started getting more fouls to UNC, and which was kind of, you know,
we don't want to start any conspiracy theories.
Well,
here,
yeah.
Jimmy.
Just my, you know.
It's a tough job. Everyone knows that, or at least they should. And because we're seeing so many games in such a short amount of time, it's not surprising to me that we're seeing some not-so-great calls. And even more than that, we're seeing people jump all over these not-so-great calls and making them the be-all and end-all. And I mean, like, overall, I think the tournament has been officiated decently. I think that the teams that have deserved to win have won. The Butler-Pittsburgh game was interesting, but Butler deserved to win ultimately, so you can only jump on the refs so much. Who have you been more impressed with, or most impressed with, Jimmy, so far?
I stayed at VCU, but just because they've been destroying teams, but are you talking about player or team?
Team. Give me the best team so far.
Right now, Ohio State. I mean, they're just taking it to the rack right now. They destroyed, what was the score against George Mason, by 40 points or
they
something?
They beat him by 32.
They've looked by far the most impressive number one seed in the tournament.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree. Ohio State has been just downright dominant so far. They've won both their games by more than 25 points. You said 32 points in their last game. But another team that's really impressed me has been Butler, who we spoke about earlier. You know, a lot of people expected that without Gordon Hayward this year, Butler would take a step back, but they haven't lost anything. Shelvin and Matt Howard have carried the load, and they've beaten Old Dominion and Pittsburgh, who's been one of the best teams in the nation all year.
Now they play Wisconsin, huh?
Yeah.
It'll be a tough game.
It will be an excellent game. I cannot wait until Thursday.
That's actually one of very few upset picks that I have going on in the next round. I'm all over Butler.
Sticking with Butler.
Really? Sticking with Butler.
Oh, I got Arizona beating Duke. I just had that feeling. Derek Williams.
For my bracket's sake, I hope Duke can prevail.
I love Big Butler.
Okay. All right.
What about Richmond? You don't think they can put it off against Kansas?
No. No, I don't.
Kansas too strong inside. Big boys, those Morris brothers.
What about Florida State and VCU? Can't be. It'd be like a mini upset, VCU winning.
That would be an
11th
upset.
11th seed going to the
league? I can definitely see VCU winning. I've been very impressed with them. And like you were saying earlier, I've been very impressed with Ohio State.
I think Florida State's
going
to blow them out.
Yeah, I think
they
so
play
too.
Great defense.
Florida State even was showing a little of their offensive flair towards the end of last game, too. They put up 71. So
I think the Magic will run out of VCU tomorrow night or Friday, whatever.
All right, Jimbo, what player have you been most impressed with in the tournament so far?
Probably have to say, what's his name? Jimmy Fredette. I mean, how many points is he averaging?
That's not a commercial pick, Jimmy.
He had 34 points, 6 assists, 7 threes. He took 23 of the 59 shots.
He's been carrying the team for the most of the load. Also, who's that guy from Ohio State? He had 25 points, David Leidy or whatever?
Yeah.
But he had a great tournament so far. Derek Williams, of course.
Derek Williams, for me, has just been an utter beast. This guy...
both games he won it by himself.
Yeah, exactly. He had the game-securing block in the first round, and then he had the and-one against Texas in the second round.
So he's going to be a top five pick in the NBA this year, you think?
Easily.
He's certainly helping his stock.
I don't know. Number one.
Maybe goes to the Raptors, huh?
No, he's not going to go number one.
You don't think Derek Williams will go number one?
It'll be Kyrie Irving or Harrison Barnes go number one. Those guys are just more dynamic game
Raptors
changers.
Might need a big guy. Like,
yeah, I could see that, potentially.
I love what Derek Williams has been able to do at the end of games. From the field, he hasn't been especially impressive. He was only 4 for 14 from the field in the previous game, 9 for 15 from the line. But he's looked clutch when it's mattered, and that's something that's going to go a long way when it comes to a potential NBA career. But I've been impressed by Jimmer as well. And I think a lot of people, Aaron Karolnik especially, kind of look past BYU
as the
previous round and continue to look past BYU. But Jimmer's proving to be a little bit more than a scorer. He's proving to be a winner, and he's elevating his team to a brand new level. The only thing I could maybe say is shot selection is a bit of an issue. He makes a lot of difficult shots, but he takes a lot of difficult shots as well. But his stock is rising.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
As soon as we saw Brandon Davies was suspended for the year, a lot of people just wrote off Jimmer, and I gotta admit, myself was included in that group. But that being, like, I had Gonzaga beating BYU. Gonzaga was even favored in Las Vegas in that game. But running into Florida next round, I think the Fredette era in the NCAA.
Yeah, I don't see them beating Florida
be
at
ending.
All.
Although Jimmer and BYU did beat Florida last year in the first round in overtime, so
lots of drama in this tournament, as there will continue to be as we move along. But there's some drama in the NBA recently too, some mellow drama as it continues in New York. This is part two of the mellow drama. They just can't get in a groove, the Knicks, with their new piece in Carmelo Anthony. What is it about this team right now that's not clicking, AK?
I really wouldn't be too concerned. It's a little too early to push the panic button if I'm New York. This is a team that still has a lot of talent with Carmelo and Amari. And Mike D'Antoni is a proven winner. Maybe not in the NBA championship sense, but this guy has a very good winning percentage as a coach. And I'd like to, for all those people who are panicking about the Knicks, when Clyde Drexler was acquired by the Houston Rockets in 1995, Houston went 17-18 to end the regular season. And they ended up winning the NBA championship that year.
Now, so there's hope yet.
That was a long time ago, though.
I'm not suggesting that the Knicks will be NBA champions this season, but I think it certainly bodes well for next year. I think they certainly could be contenders.
I think it still takes time to gel. I mean, it's only been there for a month, right? Look at Miami. They haven't really gelled exactly yet.
They've had their moments. I'm going to read a quote quickly. This is from Melo on Monday. "We're almost there. If everybody gets 100% on the same page, it might take until next season. Right now, in this short period of time, we've got to come together as a unit and just check out what we're going to do and do it. As far as everybody gelling and the chemistry clicking to where we want it to be, it's going to take some time." And the Knicks have lost 6 of their last 7 games to some great teams in Boston. I believe they lost to Dallas in there as well. But they've also lost to Indiana a couple times. They lost to Milwaukee. And they've had some rough times over the last few weeks. They only scored 7 points in the first quarter against Milwaukee on Sunday. They were up 14 at the half against Boston on Monday. And they only scored 35 points in the second half and lost by 10. So do you believe that there's still hope for this team going forward?
Yeah, I don't know this year, because it looks like they're going to have a very tough draw in the playoffs, whether it be they match up against Chicago, Boston, or Miami.
You know what's funny? They've beaten Chicago twice this year without Billups and Anthony and all those guys, right?
Wow. But Chicago's just playing so well right now. Right. I don't think anyone would want to.
That was a long time ago, too. That was like back in December.
That's true. And the home court will be big for Chicago as well. But I really believe that the Knicks, they're just maybe a big man away. They're pretty set in the backcourt.
Well, still, they got to play defense too, right?
Yeah,
can't
that's
play
true.
At all.
I think we're seeing a lot in the NBA over the last year that maybe this whole big three formula that Miami was all over in the offseason is not the way to go. We're seeing San Antonio, a team that's played together for a long time, a team with great chemistry, strive in the West. And then you see Philadelphia gaining on the Knicks. Are they even? I think they might be ahead of the Knicks now.
They're six right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
One game ahead of them.
And there's a team that's very well balanced. There's a team, the sixth best player, the seventh best player. They're contributing a hell of a lot more than the six man. Well, actually, Tony Douglas has been pretty good for the Knicks. But tell me a little bit about the seventh man on the Knicks, or even the rest of that starting lineup. It's just not a complete team, and Miami's had their struggles with it this season as well. So.
Yeah, it's true, but you know, you look at San Antonio, they have their own version of the Big Three with Manu, Parker, and Duncan, and then other teams, obviously you mentioned Miami and then Boston, of course, the original Big Three, I guess you could say. So,
well, Chicago's Big Three, huh? Boozer, Noah, and Rose.
Yeah, Chicago's more based around a depth perception. Well, Derrick Rose is playing like the best player in the
NBA right now. Plus, Dang's playing phenomenal lately, too. Yeah.
The Boston Big Three was successful because of their defense and of their toughness, and I question the toughness of a guy like Carmelo. I think he's kind of overwhelmed right now in the big city, and to be frank, I question the toughness of Miami as well, and I have all year, so I think that's...
Chris Bosh.
Yeah. Crygate. I think that's going to be a factor come playoff time, and that's why I still look to a team like Boston or even Chicago, who I think does have that toughness as well, to make some noise in the East rather than these so-called big threes.
Who would have thought that Miami would be regarded as the third best team in the Eastern Conference at this point in the season?
I did.
They're lucky they played the Sixers.
But
the
I believe at the beginning of the year, I had Boston 1, Orlando 2, and Miami 3.
Where'd you have Chicago?
Four.
That's
four.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I had them there too, actually.
Nobody imagined that Derrick Rose... utter domination.
I did.
Yeah, Jimmy Mango's quoted as saying MVP.
That's loyalty. Beautiful. So on the flip side, we have Denver, who have gone 10-4 since the Carmelo trade in the post-Carmelo era. Why are things clicking for them? Addition by subtraction?
No Melo.
I think it was Ty Lawson who said that there's nobody on Denver now who has sticky hands.
Yep.
I think that really personifies what's going on there. You see that the shot distribution is a lot more spread out, and that's allowed everyone to play a lot better ball. But I'd especially like to point out my boy, Ty Lawson, who has been beasting, racking up 10-plus assist games with routine. Guy's just been a monster since Chauncey Billups left, and that's even with Raymond Felton taking some of his playing time as well.
We're going to be talking baseball later, so I'm going to throw a comparison out here. The Jays have been so confident this spring training, and I know GM Anthopoulos has talked a lot about the fact that there are very few players on this team that are guaranteed anything, that you've got to earn it. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot in Denver right now, too. There are no superstars right now on the Nuggets. There's very few players that are basically guaranteed a certain amount of shots. Everyone's got to earn what they got. We got a lot of players that are playing hard, a lot of players playing for their future. And it's translating into victories right now.
Yeah, it's very true. I think George Karl's done a great job there, putting the pieces back together after Melo and Billups left. It'd be pretty hard for any team, to do what Denver has done in lieu of losing their two best players, arguably. And that certainly speaks to George Karl and what he's able to do with his roster.
It's funny, when Carmelo was with the Nuggets, they were eighth. Now they push all the way to fifth now. Yeah. So,
do you think they can get anything done in the playoffs?
I don't know.
Well, maybe get through the first round. Who are they playing first? Who's fourth right now?
It depends on the matchups. That would be a great
series. Oh, okay. I don't see them beating the Thunder.
No. It's tough. Like, in the playoffs, I feel like you just need that go-to scorer, guys who can get you buckets and play in the crunch, and I don't think they have that.
I can see them beating Dallas if they finish sixth.
Let's hope Portland matches up with Dallas. That's what I'm crossing my
fingers
for.
As of now, it looks like it's Portland.
So much hate on Dallas. I think Tyson Chandler is a big piece to that team. I think that he'll be able to give them the defensive toughness that they've lacked in the playoffs over the last few years.
I think they miss Caron Butler a lot, though.
Yeah, they don't have that swing man. I guess Corey Brewer's trying to step in there, but I guess we'll have to see. Wait and see.
We teased this a little bit in our opening. The NHL has thrown the book, as you can say, at Matt Cook, who had an elbow thrown at Ryan McDonagh the other day, and the NHL has given him 10 games and the first round of the playoffs.
That's all he'll miss because the Penguins aren't getting past the first round.
He should get more, though, next season as well. Maybe
unless
an extra 20
comes
games.
Unless Crosby comes back, then maybe. But as for Cook, how many chances are we going to give this guy to redeem himself?
Five.
This is a guy who's ruined Mark Savard's career. Mark Savard, an excellent, excellent player for many years. Ruined his career. Tried to take out Alex Ovechkin early this year and was fined for it. Then he hit Fedor Tutin from behind. and he was suspended for that. And now this album, this all happened within two-year time frame. Yep. This is bordering on ridiculous at this point. And I realize that his latest suspension is going to cost him over $200,000, and that's where it's ultimately going to hit him the most. But in this day and age where headshots are talked about as much as anything, how can we still allow this guy to lace him up knowing that he's such a risk to everyone around him?
We saw this a little bit from Trevor Gillies earlier. Two guys that got suspended earlier in the season for plays like this, and both guys barely even returning from their suspensions and going at it again. I think Gillies the first game back.
A minute in.
Yeah.
Minute.
And then here, how long has Cook been back for? A few weeks, a month, maybe?
I think it's been about 6 weeks since he was last suspended.
Yeah, so I mean, I do believe that there is a role in the NHL for the tough guy, for the goon even maybe, especially on a team like Pittsburgh. I know Sidney Crosby isn't playing a lot recently, certainly not. But his presence on the team as the greatest player in the game right now warrants a job, basically, for a guy like Matt Cook to be in there, to be the intimidator, to kind of protect that player in Crosby when he does come back. And you see these guys all over the league as well. So I do think that there's a role there. But when it comes to a guy that there's no reason to be throwing your elbows up when you're going up against the boards. I mean, it was a reckless hit. You're intentionally going for somebody's head.
The intent was very, very obvious in this case. And yeah, like as you said, like I don't even think Cook's job on Pittsburgh is to be the enforcer. That's not his job. This is a guy who's been a third liner for most of his career. He's like a grinder, a hard worker. They have guys like Eric Goddard and Derek Englund who take it upon themselves to fight for the most part on Pittsburgh. But Cook has just shown time and time again he's a dirty player. And I think the only way you're gonna teach him a lesson here is to hit him in the pocketbook where it hurts the most, losing $220,000. But I think if he were to do something like this again, you'd have to kick him out of the league.
Is this
like,
guy the most dirtiest player in the NHL ever? Or
well, Chris Pronger's has said it 8 times in his career.
Right. What about Brian Marchman? I always thought this guy was dirtiest player.
It's a different dynamic between a guy like Marchman, like a known enforcer, versus a guy like Cook, who's doesn't fight for a living, plays, but
takes cheap shots.
At the same time, the guy is just a dirty, dirty player.
Mario Lemieux's comments a few months back make this situation very interesting, because he was very outspoken about the fact that teams should be held responsible for putting guys like this on the ice that can put other players in compromising situations that lead to injuries and lead to headshots and lead to suspensions. And he actually suggested, I think it was a fine for the team. But this is something, too. Here are the Penguins, who are already short-manned, are going to be losing a player regardless of what his value is. For the next 10 games, the last 10 games of the regular season, as well as the first round of the playoffs. So will a suspension like this kind of serve as a deterrent?
I think absolutely it will serve as a deterrent. I applaud the NHL for giving this the length of the suspension was very appropriate in this case, and it certainly does serve as a deterrent for players. You have to realize that in today's NHL, cheap shots like this are no longer being tolerated, and it'd be interesting to see if Lemieux is going to retain Matt Cook. Like, the Penguins have been so vociferous in their opposition to headshots, obviously with Sid going down, and the Penguins have been leading the charge in a lot of ways in that respect, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see where they stand with Matt Cook. I know they've already supposedly told him that his play won't be style of play won't be condoned like that anymore. And we'll see how it turns out when and if he returns this season.
That's actually an interesting part of this situation as well, because in the NFL, a lot of the times when you see suspensions for headshots, because there's a lot of helmet and helmet situations, and because the speed of the game, not to say that these hockey players aren't playing in the same speed, but a lot of the times when you see suspensions in the NFL, you'll get a lot of guys on the team, a lot of the members of the organization come to the defense of that player and say, well, it wasn't a dirty hit, the suspension was unwarranted. Whereas here, you're starting to see teammates, general managers, coaches step up and say, no, suspension was warranted, this is not acceptable. Even Matt Cook, I believe it was yesterday, came out, apologized for the hit. And
yeah, texted him or something? That's what I heard.
I heard an interview in which he apologized and said that he needs to rethink the way that he plays his game.
I read that he texted. I don't know.
Which is commendable. Did he text you?
No, I read. I was watching the score yesterday and it said that he texted.
Well, I trust the score. I don't know how much I trust you, but I trust the score.
Yeah, that's what I read.
But yeah, it definitely is interesting to hear. Like, a lot of times you'd hear a teammate or coaches step up for a player, but I think it's being realized by everybody, especially those in Pittsburgh, that just can't be tolerated in the game today.
Coming up, we'll preview the National League in the MLB season. But first, a segment that we like to call the Mangos Minute. Mango, 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 mango. In the spirit of March Madness, Jimmy, we'd like to know, so please tell us. Please just tell us everything. A little bit about the last time that you were considered an underdog, maybe expectations were against you and you rose above them. Let's hear it.
Let me see. I had to go way back in high school when every time during lunch, there was these Asian kids playing checkers in the cafeteria. And they never gave me a chance. They always thought I was the class clown and whatnot. So I said, okay, let's have a tournament one time. And you know what? I beat those Asian bastards, and I won the tournament. There's another time I want to talk about. When I was in grade 9, right? I wasn't an outspoken guy. I was kind of a shy, you know. I didn't talk too much. And this one guy had a party, house party, one time Friday night. And these three guys were talking about this girl that's going to be there from another high school. They're talking about, who's going to get her. And then one guy's like, what about Jimmy? And they're all laugh. Ha, Jimmy can't get a girl. He doesn't talk to girls. And before you know it, what happens? I go to that party. I see that girl, some Polish girl. Her name's Adita. You know, I picked her up. I can't, you know, explain too much details what happened after that. But I'll tell you, that's the day when Jimmy Mangos was born.
That's the day that Jimmy Mangos was born, ladies.
Between that Mangos Minute.
Grade 9, baby, grade 9.
Between that Mangos Minute and this music, I am pumped. I am pumped right now.
Expect the unexpected, okay?
When it comes to you, I always expect the unexpected. Let's talk some baseball.
Oh, baseball. So close.
Yet so far.
We previewed the American League and, of course, the Blue Jays, the hometown Blue Jays, last week. But there's another league that we have to concern ourselves with. That's the National League.
It's mainly for those fantasy owners out there that want to get a little head start on their studies for their drafts, possibly this coming weekend.
If the story in basketball during the NBA offseason previously was the Big Three formation in Miami, then the story here has to be the Fantastic Four in Philadelphia, the four aces that they have in that rotation there with Doc Holliday, Roy Oswalt, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels.
There you go.
There we are. And who's the fifth?
Joe Blanton.
Is this the best starting rotation ever?
Well, I don't think so.
You think so, Jimmy?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think you have to go back to the 1971 Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, the Orioles.
Four starters.
Jim Palmer?
Who had 20 wins. I think that was... Yeah, I have it right here. It has Mike Cooler, I think, Pat Dobson, Jim Palmer, and Dave McNally. And they combined for an ERA of 2.89.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
How many 20-game winners do you think the Phillies will have by year's end, if any?
I think maybe two. I only see Holliday and Cliff Lee.
I'm going to say only Roy Holliday, Cliff Lee. You know, it's getting up there.
I can see Cliff Lee 18 to 20 wins.
He always like strains his oblique or something like that. Lee will have like 16, 17 wins. He'll miss like 5 or 6 starts. But Holliday is a horse. He'll get it done.
Those four pitchers are responsible for 6 seasons so far of 20-plus wins. So it's possible that we could see 2. I would also go with you, AK, and say that we'll most likely see 1. It's tough to win 20 games these days.
Especially with 5 starters now. Before, used to be 4 setters, right? So
that's a good point.
Yep.
Chase Utley is a bit of an issue for the Phillies. He's having some injury issues with his right knee, and it's tough to even say what we can expect from him this season because the Phillies aren't telling us much, if they even know that much about his injury. How far should he be falling in fantasy drafts for the fantasy owners out there?
I'd be very wary of touching Chase Utley this year. We've already seen Philadelphia pick up Luis Castillo, who was outcasted by the Mets recently. So that speaks a little bit as to what Philly thinks Chase Utley's timeline could be. We could see Chase Utley missing month, 2 months, who knows, really. But even if you look at last season when Utley was in the lineup, he wasn't nearly as productive as Chase Utley has been in the past. This guy has been a top five pick in fantasy leagues for a few years prior to last year. And, you know, a lot of it depends on how quickly he can return. But most importantly, for his owners anyways, he needs to return at full health and perform like Chase Utley has done in the past.
I drafted my league on Sunday and Utley went in the fifth round.
Wow.
Is that...
Yeah, I guess
is
I
that accurate as far as where you should be
in a roto league? I don't think I would touch Chase
12
Utley.
Teams.
Yeah, but your league was a roto league, a rotisserie league,
head to head.
Yeah, in a head to head league, you very likely have Utley in the second half of the year when it ultimately matters the most.
So yeah,
you'd have a stud second baseman at that time. But yeah, I don't know. I'd be very wary of going anywhere near Chase Utley. But that being said, you could miss a month and comes back and hits 25 home runs for you. You got a steal in the fifth round, so it's a risk.
With Cliff Lee in Philadelphia, Bobby Cox is out in Atlanta. Will his presence be missed with the Braves?
Yeah, I think anytime you lose like a mainstay like Bobby Cox, who's one of those, like, as for Atlanta, you look at Bobby Cox, like a Barry Trotz in Nashville, Jerry Sloan in Utah, guys who have been with their franchises for quite a long time. And he's just been a staple in the face of the franchise, you could say.
Jimmy, do you like Cox?
Bobby Cox?
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that what
I
said?
No, you said, do I like Cox?
Oh, I'm sorry.
But what's the answer to that question?
I like Bobby Cox. Okay?
You like Bobby Cox. Okay. Yeah, but, continue.
Well, he's been with the Braves for 20 years or something like that, and he made the playoffs, 19, 20 times? Yeah. Only one World Series to show for, but yeah, he's had a consistent team all year round. I don't know. Who's the new manager now? Sorry, I don't... Do you know?
Crickets?
Let's crack out some crickets.
I thought you guys knew.
Nobody knows.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
I don't know.
Freddy Gonzalez. That's my
guess.
Who
yep. is?
That's yep. my guess.
From one Atlanta mainstay to another, Chipper Jones will be turning 40 on April 24th. Is there anything left in the tank for Chipper?
I think the Dan Uggla trade speaks a lot to what Atlanta thinks Chipper has left in the tank. I think it's very realistic that we see Martin Prado shipped over to third, Uggla man second, and that's the new generation at the hot corner for Atlanta. Chipper's 40 years old. Guy can barely stay healthy even last year.
Career low 95 games last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, it's just becoming a little unrealistic for Chipper to stay in the lineup. Maybe a switch to the American League might do him some good.
He hasn't played 150 games since 2003, and he is batting .375 this spring. He's looked good, and I don't think that he's lost it. I think that he's still a valuable piece. I think he's going to be good at least fantasy-wise this year when healthy, but that's the key. I don't think he's going to play more than 150 games, certainly not more than 150 games. Even 100 might be dicey, yeah. But when he's healthy, he's not going to be batting .260.
That's a big if, though.
He's not going to be batting .260.
Nah, and he's got some good protection in the lineup. The lineup's improved with Uggla and Jason Hayward, who's poised to have a huge
Brian McCann.
So there's some good pieces there protecting Chipper Jones in spite of his advancing age. I guess I do agree that he has some value for...
Maybe he'll retire in May like Ken Griffey Jr. did last year.
If he starts out poorly enough, that wouldn't surprise me.
Everyone's all over Cliff Lee in this division, but you mentioned Dan Uggla. And is this not as big, if not bigger, of an acquisition? I mean, this is the first second baseman ever to start his career off with five seasons of 20-plus home runs. Is this not the most underrated player in the majors, if not the most underrated second baseman, at least, in the majors?
Yeah, I think Dan Uggla is certainly up there in terms of underrated players in Major League Baseball. But this is a guy who got a big contract this offseason. Florida wasn't willing to give him to him. And they traded Uggla to Atlanta for, I believe it was Omar Infante they received in return. So Uggla's a guy that's very consistent. You can pencil him in for 25 to 30 homers, around 100 RBIs. Batting average a little on the low side, although last year he was pretty good. But definitely a mainstay in the middle of the order for any team, pretty much.
The Jays were so close to signing Uggla, too.
Very
close.
That'd
be nice.
The NL East produced the Phillies and the Braves last year. They both went to the playoffs, the Braves via the wild card. The New York Mets were once again the odd man out, as they seem to be from... time to time. Jimmy, what's wrong with this organization?
I have no idea. They just suck, man. They're pitching. Who's their pitchers? Mike Pelfrey and Jonathan
Santana's
Lee.
Out until
R.A. Dickey, Chris Young. I never heard of these guys in my life. And I mean,
Chris Young's a big man. if he stays healthy, he could pay dividends. Potential fantasy sleeper.
It's the San Diego effect for Chris
very
Wilson.
Deep fantasy sleeper.
Very deep, but I think ultimately it comes down to their big bats.
Jose Reyes, Jason Bay,
Beltran, yeah. Jason Bay. These are guys they're paying massive amounts of money to.
And David Wright, he had a good
David
season
Wright, of course.
Last
Wright had a good season, but you're right. All three Bay Beltran, and Reyes have to have comeback seasons for them to have a chance in this division.
Yeah, obviously Beltran was afflicted with his knee injury. That's pretty much become a chronic situation for Beltran. I highly doubt he's ever going to return to his prime where he was a 40 home run guy. And Jason Bay had a concussion last year, but even prior to that, he was really struggling from a power aspect, which is what obviously the Mets are looking
Mike
for.
Mike Pilfrey had 15 wins for that team.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, someone's got to win some games for the Mets.
R.A. Dickey actually played well once he got over there as well. Former
he had
Ranger.
A good ERA. I think it was 2.84.
Pelfrey was really good in the first half, but he tailed off towards the second half. So,
how much longer are we going to be able to talk about this division without acknowledging the Nats as a contender? Right now, they're clearly not, but once Strasburg and Bryce Harper get involved in Major League action, are we looking at a potential contender down the road?
Oh, absolutely. When you're talking about talents of Steven Strasburg, who's an unquestioned ace, when he's right, and then Bryce Harper, one of the preeminent prospects in baseball, if not the preeminent prospect in baseball. And you also toss in guys like Ian Desmond and Jordan Zimmerman, who's coming off Tommy John surgery.
Nigel Morgan.
And then obviously Ryan Zimmerman's one of the best third basemen in all of baseball. So there is definitely a future to look forward to in Washington.
We debated the Jose Bautista contract last week. And it's hard to talk about the Nats without acknowledging the 7-year, $126 million contract that Jason Wirth got over the offseason. So without any pun intended here, is he worth it?
Well, I think when you're talking about Washington, you need to toss some extra money a player's way in order to lure them. I'm pretty sure Wirth had some offers out from Boston, who ultimately got Carl Crawford instead in New York. You probably could have fit him in somewhere into their lineup. But when you're dealing with Washington, it's just not as desirable a city to go to. I don't know. I don't want to speak for Wirth, but I think ultimately at the end of the day, Philadelphia wasn't willing to pay him what he believes he's worth, and I guess you're worth what a team's willing to pay you. So it's certainly going to be interesting to see what type of value he provides for Washington this season. I think he'll do okay.
You think they hope to have him sticking around by the time that these young guys come up to provide some veteran leadership and help make a playoff push?
Well, I don't know. He's already 32 years old, too, right? And I think he hit his best average last year. I think it was 296, but before that, he hit below 270 the rest of his career. But he seems like an average. I don't know. He only had 27 home runs. I don't know if that's good numbers in National League.
Yeah, another interesting thing about Wirth is if you look at his numbers at home versus the road, his home numbers greatly inflate his overall statistics. He was way better at Citizens Bank Park last season than he was on the road. His batting average certainly reflects that as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he adjusts playing in a less hitter-friendly stadium in Washington.
Plus, who's he hitting behind anyways? Who's like the three guys at second?
Well, Ryan Zimmerman will hit three, and then maybe LaRoche hit five behind.
Adam LaRoche, yeah.
Yeah, okay. He's a good power hitter.
Anyone think that any team that's not named the Philadelphia Phillies can win this division? Or do they have it locked up?
I don't know. Maybe the Braves somehow. Maybe the Braves can win the wild card, but...
Yeah, the Braves are going to need huge years from your boy Tommy Hanson, and Tim Hudson's going to need a repeat season, and then the young relievers, Johnny Venters, Craig Kimbrell, are going to have huge years. It would pretty much take a miracle to take Philadelphia down. They're just too stacked.
Philadelphia has to be considered the NL Giants at this point, but the actual NL Giants, the San Francisco Giants, are the team that won the league last year, and they won the World Series last year. And yet they're getting no respect. Why is that?
I just, there's not the star power there for San Francisco that there is on other teams, but I think you have to respect a team that won the World Series. It goes without saying. Obviously, a lot of pieces came, like Cody Ross, Edgar Renteria, they're not going to replicate
Wander
their...
Even.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to replicate the seasons or the few weeks that led them to winning the World Series, but... I think any time you have a pitching staff led by Lincecum, Kane, Jonathan Sanchez, Madison Bumgarner, that's stacked.
Barry Zito?
And a stacked bullpen, too, and that's ultimately what wins.
Oh, yeah. The beard guy. What was the guy's name?
The guy with the beard. Brian Wilson.
They had another guy who had a big beard, too.
Sergio Romo, I'm going to say.
Yeah, they were phenomenal in the playoffs. So
they've got a star in Posey, that's for sure. Aubrey Huff had a great year last year. Sandoval had a terrible year last year, but I could see him as a potential bounce back this year.
Oh, absolutely.
He's certainly a sleeper pick.
He's lost a lot of weight.
Well, they got Miguel Tejada, too, this year, too, right?
So what was that?
I think they signed Miguel Tejada.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be playing second base, or shortstop this year.
We got to
see what else he's got in tank.
It's finished.
But yeah, back to the Kung Fu Panda. Guy's still only 24 years old, and he's coming off of a year in 2009 where he hit 25 home runs, batted .330. So I don't think he was as bad, or he is as bad as he did last year, but I don't think he's as good as 2009. Maybe something in the middle is what you can expect.
I think that's definitely realistic. But anytime you're talking about a guy who's eligible at third base and who has hit .330 in his career with 25 jacks in a season, you have to look very seriously into that. And you also have to admire a guy who's has been criticized for being overweight in the past, and he took it upon himself to lose 30, 40 pounds in the offseason. Certainly has a potential to pay serious dividends for both the Giants and his fantasy owners this year.
The Rockies made a late push at this division last year, and they've got some good young players, especially in Carlos Gonzalez, who had a career year last year. Do you think he can come even close to repeating the year that he had?
Well, a stat I like to look at when talking about repeating seasons is batting average and balls on play. And for Gonzalez, I know it was close to .380 last year, and that's not sustainable, although his career mark is near .340. So he has a track record of a high batting average and balls on play, but I don't think it's realistic to expect another 35, close to 40 home run season with a
He came close to winning the Triple Crown, whatever it was.
Absolutely incredible season for Gonzalez. And this is a guy who's a stud prospect for years prior to last year.
In Oakland.
Was the last time someone won a Triple Crown? I'm curious. Was it Albert Bell or something like that?
I'd say Carl Yastrzemski was the last.
How long ago was that?
Maybe like 1960s.
We'll have to fact check that.
Very close.
But yeah, Gonzalez is entering his 27-year-old season, and that's generally when players tend to enter their prime. Yeah. So I do maybe not duplicating the season exactly, but he'll come close.
Yeah, anytime you have the speed power combo, it's a pretty safe bet. Like the floor on Carlos Gonzalez is a lot higher than on guys who don't have that speed potential.
Do you think Ubaldo Jimenez will have the same start as he had last year, going 10-0? I think he started.
Yeah, Ubaldo was amazing,
but he finished
prior to the All-Star
though.
Break. Yeah, but then after the All-Star break, I think his ERA almost doubled.
No, his ERA was I think the whole season was 2.88. So it's pretty amazing.
220 prior to the All-Star game, 380 post-All-Star game. Those numbers are courtesy of Aaron Karolnik.
Thank you.
Again, I seem somewhere in the middle there.
But, yeah, again, when you have guys, a guy like Ubaldo who throws serious heat and strikes a lot of guys out, the possibility.
I want to correct myself. Cargo is 25. Ubaldo is 27. Okay. But they're both young. They're both entering their prime.
And Troy Tulowitzki made a late run at the MVP last year.
Indeed. We talk about Carlos with the mixture of power and speed that he has and how dangerous that is. And Matt Kemp in L.A. possesses those same skills, but it didn't quite click last year. Maybe some Rihanna issues. Maybe he's hung up on Rihanna like our boy Jimmy Mangos is over here. But now that things are resolved, hopefully, will he have a bounce back here this year?
Well, I think a lot of what attributed to Matt Kemp's down year last year was Joe Torre shifting him up and down a lineup. One day he was batting second, next day he's batting eighth. So I think the stability that the new manager will provide is going to be very beneficial for Matt Kemp this year. Expecting very close to a 30-30 season. Anything less is a disappointment.
Last year he didn't have a bad year anyways. He had, I think he led the team with home runs, 28.
Yeah, but
RBIs.
With Matt Kemp's standards, right, this guy has as much talent as anyone in baseball pretty much.
So you think he can get like 40 home runs this season?
Matt Kemp is... He's never been able to put together a full season, whether it be due to his manager or due to some injuries.
Too many distractions, huh? Rihanna.
Too many distractions for Matt Kemp in the big city.
Winner of the NL East, who you got?
Philadelphia.
Oh, sorry. We got Philadelphia in the NL East. Sorry. Winner of the NL West.
I'd like to say the Dodgers, just because I do believe they have a lot of talent, but I think at the end of the day, you know what? I'm going to say the Dodgers. I've changed my mind.
Look at that.
Jimmy.
I want to stick with the champs and go with the Giants.
We're split here. I'm going to go Rockies.
Ooh.
Wow. I think they've made late pushes in the season last year. They did that a few years back as well. I think they're going to put it all together. I think they're young.
Or the Padres. The Padres had the lead for in August for they had 10-game lead over the Giants. And
I think I might hit more home runs in the majors than the San Diego Padres do this
year. Lost some guys. Oh, Adrian Gonzalez. So yeah. Huge loss.
A lot of weight put on the shoulders of Ryan Ludwig and
Chase Headley.
Cameron Maybin might be a sleeper pick there, former Florida top prospect.
Yeah, because he has the speed potential, but I don't know. In Petco, it's going to be very difficult to put up any numbers worthy of fantasy consideration.
We only have a couple minutes left, and I want to touch on the NL Central. We'll start with the Cardinals because they're the big story right now with Albert Pujols potentially playing in his last season in St. Louis. They've lost Adam Wainwright to injury. Does this team still have what it takes to win the division?
Well, you mentioned Adam Wainwright going down with the Tommy John surgery. If there's any team, any pitching coach that can patch together a staff, I don't think there's anyone better at it than Dave Duncan. This is a guy who's resurrected the career of Chris Carpenter, and then he had Jaime Garcia pitch awesome last year. And Jake Westbrook, when he came over from the AL, was downright nasty. Who knew that Jake Westbrook had it in him? So I think if they're able to patch that together, obviously they have Pujols and Holiday, and obviously they're going to need a big year from Colby Rasmus, but they're certainly top contenders in the NL Central once again.
Kyle McClellan has had a good spring training as well, so maybe that's a potential fill-in for...
Well, they're going to need someone to eat those innings.
That's the one division that's very open this season, I think.
Yeah, there's three or four legitimate contenders.
I think the Cubs, too. I think the Cubs can be a sleeper.
Yeah. What do you think of the Reds this year? Can they repeat?
Yeah, they have most of the pieces still intact from last year's run. And I think a lot of guys like Votto and Aroldis Chapman, I'm going to be very interested to see how he does this year. The 103-mile-per-hour fireballer.
He's going to break his arm, I think.
Yeah, and he throws too hard. It's just not human.
Human.
Yeah, it's a little inhuman, actually, I guess you could say. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how they use Aroldis as well. If this is a guy who really isn't fit to be a setup man. I compared to Neftali Feliz in Texas. This is just a guy who needs to be the closer and needs to be in the rotation, either or. But the Reds are pretty deep in the rotation this year.
My pick in the division is actually Milwaukee, I think. No?
Well, we already have Greinke, who's hurt, and Markham's hurt, too. It's a little sketchy
situation.
They'll
be fine. Fielder and Braun are a beast combination in the middle of the order. Very tantalizing. And I'm going to go on record right now as saying Yovani Gallardo will be the Cy Young.
Wow.
Really?
I do like that call.
And the Brewers will make the playoffs. I do think that the wild card will come out of this division. I think the Cardinals will be in there. The Reds will be involved as well. I don't know about the Cubs.
I like the Cubs, especially the Matt Garza signing.
Pirates and Astros are a joke. But I think the wild card will come out of this division. Give me your World Series prediction.
Ooh, wow.
Jimmy, give me an AL team, an NL team, and then your ultimate winner, if you can.
Boston over Philadelphia in World Series.
Oh, don't you be a little more bold there, Jimmy. I'm going to go with the New York Yankees as World Series champions. Wow. They're going to make a trade for a pitcher, don't worry. Over Cincinnati. Let's call it Cincinnati.
Oh, really? The Reds. No Philadelphia, eh?
I'm going to go Brewers over Red Sox.
It's a very trendy pick, the Brewers this year.
Very trendy. So that's all that we have for you today. That was a pretty good show.
Another great show. Every week. It's a pleasure.
I say that every week, but I've been lying up until this point. This was wonderful.
Yeah, I had a great time spending quality time with you boys.
Once again, follow the show on Twitter at SportsJax. You can follow me at JLou_sports on Twitter. You can follow AK at Aaron_Korolnik.
I need some more followers, so please do follow me.
And you don't follow Jimmy Mangos.
You can follow me in the streets.
He follows you.
Ooh, I like that.
See you next week.